Should be noting that as of this recording, we do not have a verdict in the trial of Karen Reed. So keep that in mind and context when you're listening and what we are aware of. Right now, we're going to take a look back on the last day of trial before closing arguments. And then in our next segment here this morning, we're going to be looking at closing arguments and talking about what was discussed. And I don't know. I don't know when this verdict will come in, Stacey. This may be airing after there is one. We do this quite often to try to guess how long is it going to take. So as of right now, we don't know how long, how many hours of deliberation is it going to take to get a verdict in the trial of Karen Reed?
Honestly, if I were one of the jury members, I would walk into that room and go, not guilty. Let's get her on a DUI charge. Let's get her on involuntary manslaughter and go with that. So to me, and before you hit the record button, you said, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we got a verdict today when they, the same day that they started deliberations. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised by that either. I would be very, very surprised if they went a couple days. I know there's a lot of evidence, a lot of testimony that took place. There was 31 days of a trial, but I think these people are exhausted. And I don't think it's been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that she did this.
Yeah, I think I agree pretty much with everything you said there. I will say I thought Lally did pretty good on closing arguments, but we'll talk about that in our next statement or in our next segment. So you're here saying how long? How many hours?
I'm going to go 5 hours.
Okay, and we're about like one in right now, right? Are we there yet? Did they give it to the jury? Okay. So we're one in, you're going to say five. So that would put us at today if they stay into the evening hours. Okay.
What do you think?
I'm going to guess, and I know off the air I just said I wouldn't be surprised if it happens today, and I would not be surprised if it happens today. But I think the odds are more in favor of, I'm going to say tomorrow. So I'm going to say tomorrow around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So however many hours that would be, I'm going to guesstimate probably that's like 10 hours of deliberation or so. I don't know. It depends what time they get in and what time 1 o'clock falls out. I just feel like it's going to be midday tomorrow. Could be wrong. Or tomorrow,
like they're gonna sleep on it.
Yeah, and tomorrow means today if you're listening to this show. So the 26th is what I'm talking about, because we're recording it in the evening hours of the 25th. So I'm going with 10.
And I think when we dealt with Chad Daybell, it was just such a clear cut case. They were back within what, 2 hours?
Yeah.
I think the paperwork is gonna take longer than deliberations.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Daybell's was too. They had a lot of paperwork to do. I don't think there was any deliberation. They just went, guilty, everybody? Okay, good. Let's work on the paperwork. And it took 2 hours. I'm thinking that's probably where we are, unless there's one holdout.
I don't know. And I think there could be here.
Totally convinced.
We'll talk about the closing arguments here in our next segment, but I don't know. I have some thoughts on all that. Let's wrap up the last day of trial, though, and what happened there in the pivotal moment in the Karen Reed murder trial. The defense rested its case in chief after presenting expert testimony that challenges the prosecution's narrative. Reed, a Mansfield woman, is charged with second-degree murder and the death of Boston police officer boyfriend John O'Keefe, whose body was found outside a Canton home in January of 2022. The defense final witness, Dr. Daniel Wolf, an expert in accident reconstruction from ARCA, testified that there is not enough evidence to definitively determine what happened to John O'Keefe. Let's take a listen to that testimony.
What was your conclusion with following that testing? What was your conclusion with regard to whether or not it was consistent or inconsistent with the damage to the truck and the taillight was consistent or inconsistent with making contact with John O'Keefe's head at or above 15 miles an hour?
So strictly speaking to a damage perspective, the 15-mile-an-hour interaction between the hybrid head form and the test tail lamp produced significantly more damage than that of the subject vehicle. So that indicates that, again, the damage on the subject tail taillight was less than that of the test taillight.
So if we were to, if I were to ask you whether or not there would be more or less damage to the taillight if you increase the speed to 24 miles an hour, what is your conclusion?
Well, you're talking about significantly more kinetic energy. So if you just think about it from, again, a kinetic energy standpoint, you know, kinetic energy is equal to 1/2 times the mass and the velocity squared. So if you're squaring that velocity and you're going from 15 up to 24 miles per hour, you're going to get a significant amount of more energy associated with that. Probably, I could pull up my calculator, but you're probably looking at 2.5 more times energy than the 15 mile an hour test.
Which means 2.5 more times the damage to the taillight?
Certainly.
Which you did not see in your review of the materials, correct?
Correct.
So what is your opinion or conclusion as to whether or not the damage to the taillight was caused by striking John O'Keefe's head?
From a damage standpoint, it was inconsistent.
There you go. Prosecutor Adam Lally questioned Wolf about the omission of O'Keefe's shoe and hat in his reconstruction report. Wolf acknowledged this, but maintained that these omissions did not affect his overall conclusions. Wolf described an experiment where he and colleagues used an air cannon to launch a cocktail glass with a taillight, replicating the damage found on Reed's vehicle. He explained, "We aimed at a portion of the taillight where the clear and red met, because that's where the damage seemed to emanate from." When asked about the respondent's hearing, Reed said, "I hit him 3 times. Wolf admitted he was unaware of this, as well as the presence of O'Keefe's DNA on Reed's taillight. Despite this, Wolf stood by his analysis, stating absolutely not when asked if this new information changed his conclusions. Following Wolf, Dr. Andrew Rentschler, a biochemical engineer, or biomechanical engineer, rather, an accident reconstructionist, took the stand. Rentschler's testimony focused on the inconsistencies between the injuries O'Keefe sustained and the damage to Reed's SUV. The injury to O'Keefe's head was not consistent with being struck by a vehicle. In that scenario, there would be damage to a person's spine, Rentschler explained. He further noted that a car driving at 24 miles per hour would cause significant damage to both the taillight and O'Keefe's arm, which was not observed in this case. I would expect to see significant trauma, more so than simply the abrasions diagnosed in this case, Rentschler said. Let's take a look at that testimony.
If you were to presume, for purposes of my question, that an arm was struck by a vehicle taillight traveling 24 miles an hour or thereabouts, would you expect to see patterned abrasions with no bruising?
Objection.
Or just what would he expect to see?
What would you expect to see?
So again, I would expect to see significant trauma to the skin, to the bone, to the tendons. I wouldn't expect to see just abrasions, pattern abrasions. I mean, abrasion by very definition means that it's trauma to the skin, which is created through rubbing or grinding or friction. So it's basically something rubbing against the skin that basically wears away that top layer of skin. It's not blunt force trauma. If you have blunt force trauma, that produces a contusion or a bruising. It's not a laceration type injury where you have a cutting injury that actually produces a cut or a significant laceration. It's really just rubbing along the skin. So that would be inconsistent. If you have an arm that's actually struck at 25 miles an hour, you're going to have significantly greater damage, especially if there's a taillight that shatters. So you have the taillight coming in, it's hitting the arm, and it's moving forward into the arm. So if that actually caused fracturing of the taillight, then parts of that taillight are going to be pushed into the arm and likely embedded into the arm as the vehicle continues forward and pushes the arm out of the way. I didn't see any of that. Basically, just superficial abrasions, which all appear to have a similar amount of force. There's not a difference. That's the other thing. If you had a taillight shatter and explode on an arm, you would have some areas where you would have very deep contusions or lacerations, others lighter areas. But when you look at the abrasions that were noted in this case, they all appear to be of the same force, generally the same direction and the same severity, which would be inconsistent, in my opinion, with being struck at 25 miles an hour.
How do you think the jury's taking all of this?
You know, I don't know. The dude's a biomechanical engineer. He understands movement.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to him and thought, yeah, he's making some sense here.
Yeah.
But again, I keep wavering back and forth. This case has me so confused. And I keep saying it. We are never going to know what happened to that poor man. We're never going to know.
A verdict.
I don't care how this jury comes back.
Yeah.
We're not going to know.
The verdict is not going to determine what actually happened to John O'Keefe. No matter. That's just the thing. I mean, we don't know either way. I do not believe he was beat up in the house, but as far as exactly how he died out there, he was struck by Karen, which I'm saying could or could not be a possibility. It doesn't even require that, and it doesn't require any sort of fight in the house either. It could be just somebody slipping and falling and hitting their head, getting back up, kind of concussed, falling back down again, laying there in the snow. Eventually, dog comes over. However, what gets me and why I think there likely was some sort of a vehicle strike is the microscopic pieces that were found in his clothes of the taillight. Now, do I think there's a possibility?
That's going to be a hard one to refute.
Yeah. Do I think there's a possibility that the police planted more evidence? Yeah, I do. I think that could have actually happened. And it's because I think possibly they wanted to really make sure that, Karen Reed was held responsible for what happened. I don't think she purposely did any of it. I think she was angry. I think that there was a fit of rage there. I could see, the reverse quick. And another thing, John, judging by how angry she was on those phone calls, if I fucking hate you, she's driving ahead like 20 some feet, whatever it was. And then said one more thing to him and he's back there, hits it in reverse to go do that. Says it. Maybe he, is coming up, and it just doesn't see it happening and gets hits by the car. And she doesn't even realize that she hit him and she's blackout drunk and doesn't remember any of it.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think it was on purpose at all. I just think it was, you got a very unhealthy individual looking at the relationship the way that she is, and you got two drunk people too. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. There's a bunch of drunk people, and I just wonder if at the end of the day, they all realize that they're all shit-faced drunk.
Yeah.
They're all law professionals. They need to maybe not be drunk and driving. And
yeah.
Maybe it was shit. One of our own fucking died because we were so shit-faced drunk. We need to make this look like it was an accident instead of we were really careless.
And they probably heard the fucking phone calls and they heard the I hate you and how awful she was. And they kind of put more and more together. She's was an awful girlfriend, it sounds like. I mean, in her whole obsession of, I need more time over the kids. Fuck you. She just seems like she was an awful human being and did not understand the value of John raising those kids. But that has nothing to do with murder. But I could see his buddies hearing that shit and being like, she's fucking going down. Kind of like they're like, she's fucked, because they realized more of what they perceived to be a real shitty human being. And then it was pretty clear cut that she did hit him, I think. But I think they really wanted to weigh the scale to really make it look like it, which you can't do because then it looks like a fucking conspiracy. I think that's what happened. That's my guess. I don't know. I think Proctor was up to some shit.
Yeah, Proctor.
But
once this is done, I want to find out what happens to him.
Yeah.
If there's some sort of a trial, I want us to follow that because I need some closure on the Proctor piece of this. The rest of it, I kind of like, okay, I'd love to hear the verdict. I need to know what's going to happen to him because he is the most unprofessional human being in a law enforcement position.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
I mean, these are just my speculations. I have no idea. That's my guess. if we're trying to, you know, play Clue here. But yeah, I just think it's a lot of middle. There's no absolute this way or that way. There's a lot of kind of in the middles here that all came together at different pieces and different places. And that's what we have. And that's why it's so confusing, because it's nobody wanted this to happen and nobody remembers it happening. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So the defense also called Dr. Frank Sheridan, a retired chief medical examiner who testified about the injuries on O'Keefe's arm. Sheridan, who had conducted over 12,000 autopsies, stated that the cuts on O'Keefe's arm were more consistent with a dog attack than a vehicle strike. No bruising here. We have linear abrasions without any bruising. It does not look remotely like an impact from a motor vehicle, he said. Sheridan explained that the pattern and type of abrasion suggested they were caused by an animal's claws or teeth. He used a laser pointer to highlight clusters of abrasions on O'Keefe's arm, describing how most appeared to be claw marks. During cross, Lally asked Sheridan about the absence of any other injuries typical of a vehicle strike. Sheridan reiterated that the injuries observed were inconsistent with being hit by a vehicle and more aligned with a dog attack. Let's take a look.
Seen it was standing with his arm outstretched like this and was struck by the rear of an SUV only in his arm at 24 miles per hour. Are the injuries in Exhibit 19 consistent with that scenario?
No, I do not think so.
Can you describe that?
Well, as I think I've already mentioned before, one thing that's not there, that should be there, given that idea, that scenario, is there should be bruising, at least bruising, if not perhaps even more than that, but bruising for sure. Secondly, the appearance of these injuries, their pattern, if you want to just call it that, the way they're distributed doesn't seem to fit the idea of the rear of a vehicle being the impacting object.
And at 24 miles per hour, would you expect to see fractures or breaks in the arm?
You could do. There'd be other factors involved, as to depending. It would depend on a lot of things, but it's possible. Yeah.
I'd like to direct your attention to the injury that Mr. O'Keefe sustained to his head. Do you recall that injury?
To the head.
To the head.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe that injury for the jury?
Well, there were a few minor injuries on the face, but the major injury, and indeed the main cause of death, was an impact to the back of the head, slightly to the right of the midline of the back of the head, and where there was a laceration. A laceration is another type of blunt force trauma, but this is a laceration is where the skin is actually opened up or it's split, so you get bleeding from a laceration. So there was a laceration, as I said, in the back of the scalp, in what's called the occipital area. And beneath that, when the skin was moved away as part of the autopsy, there was extensive bruising, hemorrhage in other words, in the scalp at that same point. There was a fracture that started at that point in the skull, but traveled all the way forward to the frontal areas of the skull. So you have the impact of the site is clear because, as I said, you've got the laceration. That's where the impact was. So you have that the impact with the scalp hemorrhage there and the skull fractures. Then the brain itself had injuries, significant injuries. First of all, there was bleeding on the surface of the brain, and that's very common in situations like this.
Luke, I am your father.
The gentleman has an upper respiratory issue of some sort, but he's an older man. I gave him a little leeway, but he sounds like he belongs in Harry Potter.
Yeah, I mean, it did kind of seem like someone
on the Star Wars.
Yeah, I was thinking that, like it was, or a horror movie. I could see this being a gentleman on Halloween or something in a the trial of Michael Myers. I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah. So he was on the stand. He's also noted that there was no canine DNA found in O'Keefe's arm, but that did not alter his professional opinion. I'm kind of not quite understanding that. Of no canine DNA if he was attacked by a dog. I mean, I would think you'd have something. But there is a pig DNA. So that does make a little more sense. If it, I don't know. It just, you're in the vet world.
Was it a wild pig?
If you get, not that it was a wild pig, but no, I'm thinking like pig treats that dogs eat. And then it was transferred to him, like secondhand DNA from the pig treat that the dog just ate. And then that's how it went there.
Is their DNA always deposited in a bite? I would think in their saliva, and especially a dog that is excited, I think you're going to see saliva. So that's a bit confusing, but I don't know. You know, by the time they got to him, was the snow, did it melt and it got washed away? I don't know.
It may not be a dog bite at all.
True. Yeah. I don't know. I really don't. But the type of bites look like it was from something big. And I know you and I talked about a coyote yesterday. A coyote is not necessarily big.
They can be. They certainly can be. We got some down here that look like wolves.
Okay.
I don't know how they are over there.
German Shepherd maybe clocking in at 80, 90 pounds. I don't think a coyote is 80, 90 pounds.
I do.
Really?
Yeah. I've seen some that are certainly 80, 90 pounds. Yeah.
Dear God, what are they eating?
Children.
Okay. Well, there you go.
No, I don't know, but they certainly...
I'm looking up coyote weight.
Yeah. I've seen them that big without a doubt.
Well, if you believe National Geographic, they say 20 to 50 pounds.
Okay.
Or 18 to 44.
Wolf is 66 to 180.
Yeah, if it's a wolf, maybe.
I think we have, I don't know, maybe I'm completely off on this, but I think we have some wolves that may intermingle with the coyote population. And you get hybrid coyotes.
I don't doubt that a bit.
Is that a thing? Half coyote, half wolf?
I don't know if those two genuses can, or kingdoms, or
you're
digging into my DNA knowledge.
Cow wolf is a hybrid described from coyotes and wolves. It exists.
Yeah, coy wolf.
Yeah.
I assume they can reproduce, can they?
I don't know if they can or not, but somebody's having fun and making cow wolves or coy wolves.
Yeah. If that's really a thing, it looks like they occur in Ontario, Quebec, Alaska. So they're more of a northern.
Okay.
Oh, hard to say. I've actually vaccinated a wolf once. It scared the living hell out of me.
Yeah.
Somebody in where I live, they actually had a wolf as a pet. And it was a very large animal, very large. And we sedated it and vaccinated it and sent it down its way. It was, you know, we sedated because we don't trust them. They're very big and they're not domesticated.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they want to eat you, they will.
I guess I'm completely wrong on the poundage of coyotes. Yeah. Like a record.
I've seen them in my neighborhood. They're small.
A record one was 75 pounds. So I guess I thought, I don't know. I mainly see them from a distance. They look, I guess, bigger to me than I guess I think they are because they're usually pretty far out there.
No, it doesn't mean that there wasn't some neighborhood dog that came along and decided to start chomping on him for some reason.
Sure.
Maybe had a bone to pick with him or who knows. That piece of evidence... we aren't going to get an answer to.
And I don't.
We just aren't.
Yeah. I'm going to go with wildlife of some sort. I just don't know what. And I don't know that it really has anything to do with his death. I think it is more so body in the road or near the road. Animal finds it. And that's my guess. I don't know. I don't know. All right. Our next segment, we're going to take a look at the closing arguments and talk about that. Stick around.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else? Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.